Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to your one-stop shop against the liberal media glop at Newsbusters. Yeah, it can be sort of like dodging my cat's puke puddles. Honey, Lulu ate too fast again. We should mention to you, Brent Bozell's interview with Donald Trump Jr. is live now on our sites at newsbusters at cnsnews.com. You can see it at Rumble, etc. Donald Jr. talks about, well, most humorously, Hunter Biden coverage. Yes, Donald Jr. wonders if he decided to be a finger painter, whether he could charge $500,000 and the media would find that was okay. Let's talk a little about Tucker Carlson. On Thursday night, Tucker had a little fun with MSNBC as they celebrate their 25th anniversary. Nick Night Train Fondacaro captured that for us at Newsbusters. There are several Tucker Carlson hit pieces circulating now. This is sort of what says you've arrived. Guess what? You're the number one host in cable news. And the reason, because you're popular with conservatives, it must be because you're a horrible human being. You must be a racist. The Washington Post has a new hit piece titled, How Tucker Carlson Became the Voice of White Grievance. Not white backlash, not white counter-argument. Do we ever have anything like that? Al Sharpton became the voice of black grievance. Probably not. The reporter on this hit piece is named Michael Cranish. For many years, he was at the Boston Globe. He was a Boston globule. And then in 2016, he moved to the Washington Post. In 2004, Cranish and two other Globe reporters wrote a book called John F. Kerry, The Complete Biography by the Boston Globe Reporters Who Know Him Best. Does that sound like it was probably pretty positive? Yes. You can just look at the actual, go to Amazon, you look up the book, and it summarizes like this about Kerry. A decorated Vietnam veteran who became an influential, if unlikely, anti-war protester. A lanky 60-year-old who quenches his thirst for danger with high-speed kiteboarding, windsurfing, piloting, motorcycling, and in some cases, driving. A senator with a reputation as an investigator and foreign policy expert. It's not quite as bad as Douglas Brinkley's Tour of Duty, which also came out in 2004, but both of them together were both book-length advertisements. Then in 2012, Cranish was part of a team that wrote a book called The Real Romney. This was not about how Romney was a wonderful human being. Cranish and others went on NPR's Fresh Air talk show, a salon for lefties. Cranish said, 2012, the GOP platform takes a very hard line on abortion, and he's picked Paul Ryan, who in the past has voiced a very hard line on abortion. And it's a disaster on the left and certainly in the center. Yeah, this is hack liberal reporting at its best. The Republicans, when they oppose abortion, took a very hard line. The Democrats, when they're like, we want abortion till after birth and we want the taxpayers to fund it, are like, they believe in women's reproductive health. There's no extreme. There's no hard line. There's no radical. We're just for women. We're for choice. In 2016, Cranish was part of a team that wrote the book Trump Revealed at the Washington Post, which once again was one of these campaign books for the Democrats. So Cranish has a pattern here. So when he comes after Tucker Carlson, you know pretty much what he's going to do. In his newsletter, Steve Krakauer wrote, "What's most notable to me about is the article spends significantly more time trying to get to the bottom of whether Carlson's first grade teacher cried in class. Literally tracking her down nearly 50 years later to try to refute a claim from Carlson's book. Than it does on the still very much live claims from Carlson about whether the NSA was spying on him." Yes, this is true. Actually, I only found one paragraph in this long hit piece about the NSA claim. It just sort of mentions that Tucker made this claim and moves on. Instead, we're treated to Mariana Raymond, 77, that's the teacher, remembers Carlson as very precious and very, very polite and sweet, and said she had no idea until contacted recently by a Washington Post reporter that her former student had ridiculed her as a key to understanding him. Mrs. Raymond says all of these stories are lies. Raymond said in an interview she never sobbed at her desk. She didn't wear an Indian skirt. She didn't advocate her political views. She wasn't a hippie. She said not only did she teach Carlson reading at La Jolla Country Day School outside San Diego with a student body that was, quote, very affluent and white, unquote, but that she also was then hired to tutor him at his home. "Oh, my God," she said when informed of Carlson's attack against her. "This is the most embellished, crazy thing I ever heard." Now, of course, because this is in the Washington Post, there's an assumption here that Tucker's lying and the 77-year-old elementary school teacher must be telling the truth. This, I suppose, is the risk of telling stories about what happened to you in grade school. Sometimes you think about those things and you wonder what that would be like. You know, the teacher I remember when it came to politics was Mr. Bruce York, who I had in high school. And he would say things like, "Cuba has a system of regulated capitalism." And up my arm would go, you know, to take exception. It was time for a debate. And in this particular class, my older brother Mike was in the class. And I'm sure every time my hand went up, he went, "Oh, boy. Here we go." But I don't think I would write a book about Mr. York and say things about him that he wouldn't like. But this is the risk you take, I suppose, that your teacher's going to call you a liar. When you get to this height in the cable news gang, your grade school teachers will have their say. There's also more in this story about comments that Tucker made on the radio show Bubba the Love Sponge, carefully recorded from like 2006 by your friendly professional Fox News cancelers. You know who I'm talking about. The Washington Post is never going to do a story on Rachel Maddow where they go grilling a grade school teacher or where they pull out things that she said on the radio in 2006. It's just not going to happen. I should point out, they start the whole Cranish article talking about a trip that Tucker made with Al Sharpton to Ghana and Liberia, like in 2003. Now, what on earth is Tucker Carlson going on a junket with Al Sharpton? I suppose he wrote an article on it for Esquire magazine, which they also note in this piece. Maybe that's why he did it. He was at CNN at the time. I think he probably thought it was going to be a hoot. Well, of course, Cranish uses this as they went to some slave dungeons and Tucker didn't cry. Tucker didn't seem to be emotionally affected, said some guy named Samson. Well, what you find when you read Tucker's article, you can find it online on Esquire, is he basically says the Samson character was fighting with the flight attendants on the flight because they were playing a rerun of I Love Lucy. And he's like, you know, "We're going to Africa and you're playing this?" Like, Lucille Ball should not be playing on the screen when they're headed to Africa. So, okay. Now, that wasn't the only hit piece on Tucker. There's a new piece in Time magazine written by Charlotte Alter who is the daughter of Jonathan Alter, longtime Newsweek hack, the guy that wrote stuff about, well, when it comes to Bill Clinton, there's private character and there's public character. In other words, if he does all the things we want and does all the good liberal things, it shows he has public character. So if his private character is trashy, we're all going to tolerate it and tell you to go away. Charlotte Alter got an interview with Tucker. I guess she talked to him when he was on vacation in Maine. And she, of course, was pressing him on whether he was vaccinated, which he found to be an invasive question. And, you know, maybe he doesn't want anybody to know because that's the kind of the game they're playing. Well, his audience is a bunch of rubes, so he can't say he was vaccinated. And then she asked him if Biden was elected. He said, yes, I've never said he wasn't elected. But he did go on to say what many of us say, which is the election was rigged by the media in that they squashed the Hunter Biden stories in the New York Post. You know, they did a lot of things to try to help drag Biden across the finish line in the news media. So they were both aggressively covering Biden as the greatest thing ever, and they were aggressively covering Trump like they always covered Trump, like he was some sort of nuclear warhead or an asteroid headed toward Earth. And she gets upset that he talks in such a way. Well, he admits Biden was elected, but he kind of says it wasn't really legit. It was kind of rigged. So she writes, "This is Tuckerism in miniature. He sanitizes and legitimizes right-wing conspiratorial thinking, dodges when you try to nail him down on the specifics, then wraps it all in an argument about censorship and free speech. He has a way of talking about culture and politics that is rooted in defiance, defiance of elites, defiance of the federal government, defiance of scientific consensus. And it has won him the loyalty of millions of Americans who are already suspicious of everything he questions." Now, isn't it usually the liberals that put the buttons on that say question authority? Aren't they the ones that have spent a lot of time calling themselves the hashtag resistance? Hasn't defiance of the establishment, I mean, I guess they think of themselves as the establishment, but they've been in very ardent defiance for years now. So it's sort of weird. This kind of attack on Tucker is sort of weird. It just shows you this is the way they treat people who just dare to disagree with them. He's defiant of the elites. How can you not accept the logic of the elites? But at least Charlotte, young Charlotte, acknowledges that all of this outrage over Tucker ends up helping him. Hit pieces in the Washington Post, not going to hurt Tucker. Hit pieces in Time Magazine, probably a plus. She writes, "The more outlandish his rhetoric, the more vehement the backlash, the more formidable he becomes. This drives them crazy." And we shouldn't have this mentality of everything that upsets the libs or owns the libs is good or smart or persuasive. If you want to win elections, if you want to win arguments, you've got to sway people who are not on your side. So it's not always about owning the libs. It may be about winning the ratings. But, you know, that you upsetting the liberals is not our main goal. But as we know with liberals, they just hate being disagreed with. So it's not very hard to upset them. If you choose to reject their premise that they are the smartest ones, they are the most compassionate, they are the ones who are not divisive, stuff like that, you will drive them crazy. But we got to make our arguments well, and especially the argument about why the news media is not serving the public with this kind of loaded liberal journalism. We'll have more after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America?
Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
All right, we're back. The column, my Tim Graham column, is about Mark Levin. He has a new book called American Marxism. It's been number one for some time, even before it came out. And one of the things I noted was CNN's Brian Stelter touted two new anti-Trump books that were number three and number four on Amazon. I think it was the Michael Wolff book and the Michael Bender book. But Stelter said, in a display of our fractured State of the Union, two Fox hosts were one and two. Mark Levin is at number one and Jesse Waters is at number two. The difference, of course, is that Levin and Waters don't do any reporting. They just bitch and moan about others reporting. Okay, does anybody believe Brian Stelter's taken the time to, one, buy the book by Mark Levin or Jesse Waters? And if he did, or if he had a copy, do you think he actually read it? Mark Levin's book isn't reporting, so to speak. I have it. Mark Levin's book does have a lot of information if you want to know where critical race theory came from and what the actual books written by the critical race theorists say. It's all in there. It's got a nice chapter on the media, and not just the news media, but the social media, the entertainment media. It's a good read, but Brian Stelter's not going to take any time to find out. He's just going to say, well, these guys aren't reporting, they're opinionizing. On the day of Levin's book release, Stelter tweeted, politics dominating the top of the Amazon bestsellers page right now. Mark Levin's new screed at number one. Screed! I have read large chunks of Brian Stelter's book, Hoax. That is a screed. That is indisputably, quote, bitching and moaning about others reporting, unquote. And of course, Brian Stelter's reporting in that book is like a lot of the reporting. It mostly relies on anonymous sources who have something nasty to say. I will say this. The Tucker pieces, both of the ones I mentioned, had a source, a named source at News Corporation, a guy named, I think it was Joe Azam. And he basically announced, he harumphed that he quit News Corp because of Tucker Carlson. And the game I usually play with this is, oh, let's put this guy's name into the Open Secrets campaign database. Oh, there it is. It's 2016, $250 to Kamala Harris. Very convenient source for Democratic newspapers to find a Democrat who claims he left News Corp because it wasn't Democrat. Another hot story on Newsbusters is about a CBS reporter named Kate Smith. Now, Kate Smith was not on the evening news every night. She was not a household name. She wasn't anchoring the news like Major Garrett. She was, however, an ardent radical feminist. So she went on Twitter to say, personal news, I quit my job at CBS News. Covering a beat like reproductive rights at such a legendary institution has been an amazing experience. Well, you can see right there, calling the beat reproductive rights tells you where she is. But the funniest part was the next tweet. Now that I'm not a reporter, I can be candid about my own opinions on reproductive rights. I'll say this, with or without Roe versus Wade, access to abortion is disappearing across the South and Midwest for low-income women, and it's happening more or less under the radar. Okay, how many parts of that are junky? Start with, Gee, nobody knew who my what my opinions on reproductive rights were before now. But also the idea that it's happening under the radar, that there are challenges to Roe versus Wade, is preposterous. This woman's whole career at CBS was shrieking about how Roe versus Wade was going away. Kate Smith would do these interviews with the president of Planned Parenthood and said, well, a majority supports Roe versus Wade, but they also support restrictions that make it effectively useless. What say you? I mean, it was like having a publicist inside the liberal media, but liberal groups have that all the time, don't they? Who needs a press secretary? I've got CBS News. And of course, she then cheerleaded for more abortion coverage, tweeting, it's a pivotal moment for abortion rights and one that deserves a lot of coverage and our attention. Editors, I know there's reader and viewer fatigue when it seems like the millionth 6-week ban, but it's still major news and ought to be covered. And of course, the way they cover it is extremely one-sided. She's fine with that. That was her whole MO. Then she had this weird thing about how she wants to give her TV-friendly clothes to local reporters that are covering abortion. I know firsthand how hard it can be and hope a new outfit can make it a little easier. Wonderful. Ryan Bomberger, who's a pro-life advocate, African-American, who's actually someone whose mother was going to choose abortion and then did not, tweeted at Kate Smith, you clearly stated your views in your completely biased coverage. Everyone knows you're pro-abortion. It's not a secret. I endorse that. I retweet that. I heart that. I think that's just completely unmissable. People who are for abortion certainly know which side she was taking, and so do the people who are on the other side. And anybody who's undecided on abortion could watch Kate Smith in action and say, whoo boy, she favors one side. And then, of course, she completely underlined it because her response to Ryan Bomberger was, it's stupid trolls like you that make covering this beat so difficult for reporters. Congrats. Somebody who sees the pro-lifers as trolls for merely stating the obvious is someone who should not have been hired to cover an issue like abortion in the first place. But this is what they do. Activism is not something that disqualifies you from reporting at CBS. It's a requirement for reporting at CBS. ABC, CBS, NBC, NPR, PBS, all of these stations, all of these networks are going to press you to become an activist. That's what the audience expects. That's what the editors expect. And if you don't produce it, you're not going to be around long. And that's why we call it out. Abortion is a serious humanitarian issue. There is a baby at the heart of every one of these abortions, and they always just blot that out. Kate Smith does not care about the unborn child. She doesn't see where the struggle is. All these networks and all their associated fact checkers don't want to look at the term that the idea that some women abort their babies in the third trimester. When you try to say these abortions happen, the fact checkers try to throw flags and say, well, this is very rare. This is not worth discussing. It's silly. It's like saying, well, mass shootings at mosques are rare. Would it matter? But that's where they are. Abortion is just one of those precious human rights to destroy another human being. And I don't want to hear you come in here and try to tell us about torturing detainees at Guantanamo or whatever the other humanitarian cause is. I want you to come and complain that everybody needs to make cruelty-free shampoo and not test it on the eyes of rabbits. If you think that aborting a child in the third trimester should be legal, you should probably think again. But the news media doesn't really allow that point of view. The news media wants to crush that point of view. They want to say, you're taking a hard line. It's a disaster. So says Michael Cranish and everybody else at the Washington Post. That's why we're here, to call it out, to tell it what it is. Come to us at Newsbusters for the latest and the hatest, whatever they're trying to put over on us. Come to us once, twice, 24 times a day, and thanks for listening in.